So yeah, we're looking at, in this series of Tuesday nights, we're looking at great Buddhist texts. That's the theme. And we're starting out, logically, with the earliest Buddhist texts, the earliest ones to be written down, which are in the Pali language, which were written down maybe 400 years after the death of the Buddha. And they're in the Pali language, and they form the canon of the Theravadan school of Southeast Asia. And they're probably as close as we get to a fairly compendious collection of the discourses of the Buddha and stories about the life of the Buddha. So that's what we're looking at. And we're looking, first of all, we've got a sort of theme. The theme for the last week and the next few weeks is metta. So we've sort of looked at the Buddha himself, and we're looking at metta, friendliness, compassion, in the Pali canon. So we heard Padmavajra talking about the Karaniya Metta Sutta, in which the spiritual life is very much seen in terms of the development of friendliness, warmth, compassion. And tonight I'm going to talk about the Meghiya Sutta, which is a really important text for the FWBO. It's a really important text for the FWBO because, as you probably know, we put a really strong emphasis on spiritual friendship and the creation of Sangha and the need for Sangha. It's one of the spiritual community, which we call Sangha. It's one of the distinctive features of the FWBO. It's the thing, perhaps the thing, that is a bit different from perhaps most Buddhist groups in the West, that we just really emphasize friendship as a practice and spiritual community as an essential sort of part of what we do and as a practice as well. And it's the thing that attracts a lot of people to the FWBO, although others find it just very challenging. So there are some really good reasons why we do this, why we emphasize friendship, emphasize compassion, which have to do with the situation, has to do with the sorts of people we are in this time and place compared to the time of the Buddha. We can tend to be a bit individualistic, maybe. Maybe our society tends to make us a little bit individualistic. That's the sort of model. Maybe we're a bit intellectual. Maybe we tend to see things rather in an intellectual way. We live in a time of individualism, fragmentation, where not many people often lack deep relationships, especially deep relationships that are about something beyond themselves. Deep relations about something that's not about us, as it were. A lot of us, we're almost conditioned to think in terms of me and my agendas and my likes and dislikes rather than trying to think of a much bigger picture. And we also maybe live at a time when people aren't that in touch with a lot of positive feeling. Sometimes we sort of talk in various things like study groups, etc., about metta, about gratitude, and about emotions like faith, shraddha, commitment. And you can see that for some people this is like, well, what are they on about? So, there can be a sort of tendency to see things in quite intellectual terms, I think, about the head. That's maybe the way a lot of us are. And that leads to a sort of way of practicing the Dharma in the West. So very often people in the West see practicing the Dharma in quite individualistic terms as something we do sort of in the privacy of our own heads, that we can best do by taking ourselves off and being on our own a lot of the time. We don't need a Sangha and we don't need spiritual friends in order to do it. So that's one aspect. And the second is to see practicing the Dharma very much in terms of developing insight, which is seen as a knowing. It's seen as knowing something about the nature of the universe in an almost intellectual way. And seeing that as doing something we can do on our own rather than that we have to do with a community of people. And there's a trouble with this solitary, individualistic approach to the Dharma. There's quite a big trouble. It doesn't work. It's counterproductive because the whole point of the Dharma is about self-transcendence. It's about going beyond a sort of focus on ourselves. And when we translate the term insight, we use the term insight, it's not just an intellectual thing. It's not just about knowing. It's about growing. And that growing is not just to do with the head, it's to do with the heart and the whole personality, the whole being. We sort of have to grow as a being in order to have insight. We need to sort of grow up. It's a bit like we grow, you know, we saw things differently when we were a child. So the way we see the world is conditioned by how we are, who we are, what we are. We saw the world differently when we were a child. When we were a child, lots of things that were really important, like, where's my teddy bear? I don't know. Or, that's mine. Or, you know, an awful lot of things were very important, important to the point of really getting in a mood about or getting in a fight about, which we now think, phew. So we see kids, you know, as adults, we see kids getting all upset about certain things, etc., etc., falling out with each other about certain things. And we sort of think, no, that's a bit daft, isn't it, you know? I'm sure that to an enlightened being, we look like that. You know, like we're falling out about and getting upset about sort of toys and games that aren't real, don't matter. I think it's one way of seeing the Dharma. It's growing up beyond being the normal sort of human, normal grown-up state. Once we've grown up, we've got a lot of growing up still to do. And that's what the Dharma's about. And that's not just about knowing. As with when we grow up from a child to an adult, we see the world differently. When we grow up from a normal adult to a more enlightened adult, we see the world differently. And that's where the insight comes in. So it's about growing, not knowing. And growing is something we do in a community of people. It's something that we do with others. And self-transcendence is about something we do with others as well. You can't have an individualistic enlightenment. In a sense, friendship is the goal. Friendship is something we need to develop, but it's also to some extent the goal. So we heard Padmavajra saying, talking about the Karaniya Metta Sutta. And that talks very much in terms of friendliness, sort of friendliness with the universe, friendliness with other beings, friendliness with what's deepest and highest in ourselves. So, you know, we heard that the aim is to have an unlimited heart of friendliness for all beings. Sending love and goodwill in all directions, beyond all selfishness, beyond all barriers, beyond all hatred, whether standing, sitting or lying down. So the aim is to be friendliness. That is, you know, an important part of the aim of the Dharma. And it's difficult to see how we can become friendliness by cutting ourselves off from one of the main training grounds in friendliness, which is other people. Yeah. So practicing the Dharma without a context, without a spiritual community, is missing a huge point. And anyway, this is all by way of a really long introduction to the Meghya Sutta. Okay. The reason the Meghya Sutta is so important to us, anyway, the way we place so much importance on it, is because it's one of the places in the Pali Canon where the Buddha is most clear, most absolutely crystal clear about the primary importance of spiritual friendship and Sangha in the spiritual life. It's something that's, you know, he's saying it's absolutely essential if we're going to make progress in the spiritual life. So this is the Meghya Sutta, and it's in a collection called the Udana, which is a great collection. Udana means something like inspired verses, because each of these texts has got a verse at the end, which is an inspired verse. The Udana is great because it's got the real smell of authenticity about it. It's one of the bits of the Pali Canon that was written down earliest. And it's closest, it seems to be, it's really fresh, it's really close to the Buddha's original teaching. Before, as happened with some of these texts quite obviously, it all got a bit tidied up. by later generations who wanted to sort of make it fit in with a sometimes a rather stereotyped view of the spiritual life. So it's not at all stereotyped. And to some extent, this sort of tidying up fitted the... Yeah, sort of made it a bit more intellectual. A bit more intellectual and took out some of the emphasis on the emotional. Whereas it's very strong in the Udana that, well, as you'll see, the message is very, very strong, that it's not just an intellectual thing. Anyway, so that's a very long intro. What happens in the sutta? Some of you, probably quite a lot of you, will know this sutta, but it's always worth, you know, it's always new things to find in these suttas. So let's have a look at it. So the sutta starts, it starts like all suttas. Sutta means thread or discourse. And it starts like all suttas with the words, "Thus have I heard." So it's great. "Thus have I heard" immediately puts me in the mood to hear a sutta. It's saying, well, this is part of the oral tradition. This was passed down as an oral tradition for 400 years, passed down from practitioner to practitioner, from the Buddha to practitioner to practitioner, and then written down. "Thus have I heard," coming from this oral tradition. So they all start, "Thus have I heard." It's almost once upon a time. So, "Thus have I heard. At one time, the Buddha was staying at place X with persons Y, Z." So, this one it says, "Thus have I heard. At one time, the Buddha was staying at Kalika Hill. And the only person he had with him was a certain Meghya." So there we go. "Thus have I heard. At one time the Buddha was staying at Kalika Hill, and with him as his attendant was Meghya." It was the only person who was with him. And so Meghya, fairly early in the sutta, Meghya goes off to Jantu village to get his alms. So he goes off with his begging bowl to collect his food. And he goes back and he has his lunch with the Buddha. They eat their meal. And he goes off to take some exercise. So Meghya goes off to take some exercise and he decides he'll walk to the river Kimikala. So he walks to the river Kimikala very mindfully, and then he strolls mindfully up and down the banks of the river Kimikala. He'd be quite in a meditative mood, he'll be really sort of observing what's going on, and he sees a place that just looks to him completely magical. He sees a mango grove. It's hot, it's an afternoon, it's shady mango grove, mango orchard if you like. And I don't know, you know, he's in a quite good state, he's quite a nice concentrated meditative state, and he just thinks, that's just amazing, I just want to be, it's paradise, if I could just be in that mango grove. And he thinks, this is a truly lovely and delightful mango grove. This would be a delightful place to come and meditate alone to work on my meditation. That's the thought that happens to him. So Meghya goes back to the Buddha, having strolled up and down on the banks of the river Kamikala. He goes back to the Buddha and he tells him that he would like to go off alone to meditate in this mango grove. This lovely, delightful mango grove by the side of the river to work on his meditation. But the Buddha says, Would you please wait a little bit, Meghya? I'm on my own at the moment. There's nobody with me at the moment. Could you wait until another practitioner, another one of my disciples, joins me? I'm alone at the moment except for you. Would you mind waiting? Well, I think this is interesting in itself, actually, because I wonder why the Buddha doesn't want to be on his own. Anyway, because he usually doesn't mind being on his own. He's perfectly capable of being perfectly happy when he's perfectly alone. There are times in the Pali Canon where he goes off on his own intentionally, usually times where the monks are getting a bit rowdy. It's hard to imagine, isn't it? But sometimes they were rowdy or disputatious. They were having rows among themselves. You can just see them going. I'm off to meditate, lad. You just sort this out yourself. So he's perfectly capable of being on his own. So why does he want Megia to stay with him? I don't know. Maybe he was ill. Maybe he was a little bit ill. People do get ill, especially in India. Maybe there was some danger around that made it better for people to be in sort of larger numbers. Maybe there's a tiger, or, you know, it's always a possibility. I don't know, and the sutta doesn't say. But from what happens in the sutta, I think it's quite possible that the Buddha wasn't thinking of himself at all, that he was actually thinking of Megia. I think it's quite possible that the Buddha knew Megia wasn't up to solitary meditation. The Buddha knew that Megia was just going to gain immeasurably more from spending the time, this sort of incredible opportunity to spend time with the Buddha, than he was by going and spending time on his own in this Mangagri. But for whatever the reason, the Buddha makes this request to Megia. He says, please Megia, wait a little, Megia. I'm alone at the moment. Would you please wait until someone else comes to join us? Anyway, that's what the Buddha says. And but Megia doesn't want to take this answer. He doesn't want to take this answer at all. He leaves it maybe a few hours, but he comes back and asks the Buddha again. Once again, he says, Buddha, I would like to go to this lovely, delightful mango grove to work on my meditation. And once again, the Buddha says, would you mind waiting a little while, Megia? I'm on my own at the moment. Please wait until somebody else joins us. But still, this isn't good enough for Megia. It's still not good enough. Again, a third time, he comes back and asks the Buddha, Buddha, I've seen this delightful, lovely mango grove. I would like to go to this exquisite, lovely, delightful mango grove to work on my meditation alone. And three times is one too many for the Buddha. In the text, you know, the text is 2,000 years old or 2,500 years old if you include the oral tradition. But you can almost feel it through the pages. You can feel the Buddha going. You see a wry smile on his face. He says, what can I say, Megia, when you talk about going and working on your meditation? Do what you think it is time for, Megia. So he's saying, look, you've asked me, I've given my opinion, you don't want it. Do what you like, Megia. You know, you're going to do what you want. Do what you want. Do whatever you want to do, Megia. So, what can I say when you speak of going and working on your meditation? Do what you think it is time for, Megia. So Megia goes off to his delightful mango grove. And he plunges into its shade, it said. He plunges into its shade and he settles himself down to meditate at the foot of a beautiful mango tree. And he sets himself up to meditate in solitude, hopefully to gain insight, to gain enlightenment. But what happens comes as a big surprise to Megia. The mango grove had looked so delightful when he was strolling up and down in a calm, concentrated way. It looked like the sort of place where meditation was going to be dead easy. Where he'd have lovely thoughts. It looked like the place that he was going to have lovely thoughts in this mango grove. But when he's alone in the mango grove, left to his own resources and away from the presence of the Buddha and the teacher's influence, he doesn't find meditation easy at all. So this is what the text in this slightly Victorian biblical translation says. It says, now as the venerable Megia was staying in that mango grove, there came habitually upon him three evil, unprofitable forms of thought. To wit, thoughts lustful, thoughts malicious, and thoughts harmful. Then the venerable Megia thought thus, it is strange in truth. It is a wonderful thing in truth. that I, who in good faith, with good intentions, left the household life for the homeless life, should be thus assailed by these three evil, unprofitable forms of thought, to wit, thoughts lustful, thoughts malicious, and thoughts harmful. So at eventide, he arose from his solitude and went to the Exalted One and said to him, "Sir, while I have been staying in that mango grove, there came habitually upon me three evil, unprofitable forms of thought, to wit, thoughts lustful, thoughts malicious, and thoughts harmful. It's wonderful. It's strange that I should be assailed thus." So Megia, it's not immediately apparent how long he lasts. Maybe it was just one day. But he doesn't have a very good experience at all. And instead of having this blissful meditations that he's looking forward to, he experiences the contents of his own mind. And he goes back to the Buddha, no doubt slightly with his tail between his legs. And he tells the Buddha, "It's surprising, it's amazing that me, I'm so good, that I should have these evil, unprofitable forms of thought." And then the Buddha gives Megia a really important teaching. The first thing he says is, "When the heart's release is immature, Megia, five things help it to mature." So the first thing to notice is he talks in terms of heart's release. So I really like that. I really like that phrase. That way of talking about spiritual progress and insight, I think is very revealing, that the Buddha calls it heart's release. It's as much a matter of the heart as it is of the head. It's as much a matter of transforming our emotional life, our emotional responses, as it is about knowing anything. The two go together. The two can't be separated. So it's as much about emotional positivity, emotional warmth, as it is about knowing or seeing. It's heart's release. And that really says something to me about what that means, what that might feel like. And the Buddha says that for heart's release to happen, for meditation to pay real dividends, we have to be mature enough. We have to have grown enough. So where heart's release is immature. And no doubt Megia is a pretty normal sort of adult human being. But still, he's got some growing up to do. His heart's release is immature. His character needs to develop further for heart's release to be mature. He needs to become more the sort of person, maybe, for whom gratitude and friendship and loyalty to his teacher are more important than a sort of gung-ho, hurried, sort of rush to get your own insight, for example. Maybe needs to become someone who thinks more about others, thinks about wider issues, not just about, you know, not seeing the spiritual life in terms of a sort of selfish, goal-orientated thing. It occurs to me that even if Megia had gained insight in the mango grove, I mean, it's possible that by leaving the Buddha on his own, that the Buddha might have been killed, for example. Might have been killed by a wild animal. Maybe that's why he wanted him to stay. And the world and other people and the whole Sangha would have been immeasurably impoverished by that. So, but Megia doesn't think about that. The whole evolution of consciousness on this planet might have been set back because Megia wanted to go and meditate in his mango grove unsuccessfully. But that doesn't occur to Megia. Megia is just about me, me, me. It's about me, me, me. It's me, me, me Buddhism. Me and my meditation and my insight. So maybe for all these reasons, the Buddha tells Megia that the reason he had the experience he did is because his heart's release is immature. And I think we can see that his heart's release is immature from the fact that he didn't pay any attention to what the Buddha asked him. I think saying to your teacher, "Well, basically, I don't care what you think, I don't care what you want, I'm off," is not the action of somebody who is about to transcend their ego-bound personality. So he tells, the Buddha tells Meghya that his heart's release is immature. And he needs to practice five things to mature that heart and the whole personality in order for insight to be mature, if you like. So five things will help him to mature it. And these are the five things that the Buddha comes up with. So the Buddha says, when heart's release is immature, Meghya, these five things conduce to its maturity. So the first one is spiritual friendship. Friendship with other practitioners. Spiritual friendship. Which is described in the text as a lovely friendship, a lovely comradeship. I like comradeship. I think that's really good. It's people involved in a joint enterprise together. So, spiritual friendship, a lovely comradeship, a lovely friendship. That's the first of the things which, when heart's release is immature, these things are helpful to mature it. The second of these things that the Buddha comes up with is an ethical life, training in ethical practice. It says he perfects the practice of right behaviour. So he says, when heart's release is immature, Meghya, this is the second thing which helps it to mature. Leading an ethical life, ethical practice. The third thing he says is, talk about the Dharma. Talk that is serious and helps to open up the heart. Talk about virtue, talk about meditation, talk about wisdom, talk about liberation. So he says, when heart's release is immature, Meghya, this is the third thing which helps to mature it. Talk about the Dharma. Which would include study, obviously, in our terms, it would be very much to do with study. Then he says, motivation, effort, energy. Energy, phrase, he says, being stout and strong about leaving unskillful things behind and developing skillful habits. So putting real energy into actually change. Putting real energy into abandoning unskillful thoughts, unskillful actions. Putting energy into cultivating skillful thoughts, skillful actions. Making a real effort. So he says, when heart's release is immature, Meghya, this is the fourth thing that helps it to mature. And finally, knowledge or insight. The word that's actually used in the sutta is translated as insight, but it's clearly not insight in the higher sense that we sometimes use. Obviously, Meghya is not a candidate for that. He can't meditate, for example, on his own. So obviously they're talking about knowledge at a sort of lower level, or insight at a lower level. What might that mean? I think it might be knowledge about the Dharma, for example. Meghya needs to know a bit more about the Dharma. We can't practice the Dharma unless we know the Dharma. Very often people want to do that, but we can't do it. We can't practice the Dharma unless we know what we're practicing. But I think also it might have something to do with self-knowledge. Meghya doesn't seem to know himself very well. He expects solitary meditation to be easy. So he was in a good state. He was in a good state when he was walking up and down on the banks of the river. He was in a very, very good state. And so it all looked delightful to him. It looked as though it was going to be easy. But he was forgetting that he was actually subject to the influence of his teacher. He was subject to the influence of the Buddha. He was subject to... His state was conditioned by where he was. His state was conditioned by what he was doing. Meghya thought that was due to his own merits. And we really, we really need to take that on board. Very often our state is very dependent on the circumstances and the people we're with. So he didn't know himself very well. He didn't know that when he was left to his own devices, it wasn't going to be that easy anymore. So the Buddha says, when heart's release is immature, Meghya, these five things conduce to its maturity. Spiritual friendship, leading an ethical life, talk and study about the Dharma. Having the motivation, the energy to make a real effort. And finally, knowledge. Perhaps knowledge of the Dharma, acquiring knowledge of the Dharma and acquiring self-knowledge. And then the Buddha sort of ties the whole thing up. And the way he ties it up is he says, okay, these are the five things when heart's release is immature. These five things conduce to its immaturity. But if we have the first one, we have all the others. So spiritual friendship is quite simply, he's saying, the most important condition and practice when heart's release is immature, which it is reasonably safe to assume is the case for us. If we don't think that's the case, we're either very far advanced or even less advanced than Meghia, perhaps. So when heart's release is immature, we need all those, but if we get the first one, we'll get all the rest. So why? Why would we get all the rest? If we get the first one, why would we get the rest? If we're around people who practice, if we're in touch with other practitioners at our own level, if we're in touch with people who have perhaps more experience than us and can inspire us a bit, it's comparatively easy to be ethical. We don't have to make a big effort to be ethical. If we're living among ethical people, when we're subject to their influence and example. But it's really easy to let ethics slide and slide and slither when we're among people who don't take ethics at all seriously, who just think we're being daft. Oh, why is he like that? Go on, have this, whatever. Go on, I'll buy you a pint of the best, mate. Whatever, I don't know. Here, take one of these, they're wonderful. All sorts of things. So when we're among people who aren't being ethical, it's really easy to let our ethics slide. It's really easy to sort of assume that because other people do it, it's fine. And even to get undermined. To get undermined because we think people will denigrate or mock because we're trying to live slightly differently from them. So if we're among people who are ethical, it's easy to practice ethics. We're inspired to practice ethics. It's easy. It's really difficult if we're not, if we don't have much contact with people who are not practicing, with people who are practicing. Similarly, if we're in contact with the Sangha, we will get talk about the Dharma. We don't even have to try. We'll have classes like this. We'll have discussions like the ones we're going to have in a few minutes. We'll talk about our practice with our friends and people who we want advice from. And we will study. We will study the Dharma and talk about it, reflect on it and talk about it. So if we're in contact with the Sangha, if we've got spiritual friendship, we will get to talk about the Dharma. It's just difficult not to. You'd need earplugs not to. Motivation and effort. It's a bit like the ethical life, isn't it? To really want to do it, to really want to make those efforts. Well, it's comparatively easy when there are positive examples around, where we're in the right circumstances, when other people are doing it and we can see the effects on them. It's inspiring. If we're talking about the Dharma, we'll get motivation and effort as well. So there's sort of interlinks between them. So we'll feel motivated. We'll feel motivated to practice. Go away for 6 months and have no contact with Buddhists and see how motivated you are to practice. It's quite difficult, actually. It's quite difficult to keep it together, to feel motivated, to keep making an effort when you don't have contact with other Buddhists. So if we've got spiritual friendship, we will tend to feel motivated. We'll tend to feel inspired by people who we see doing it. We'll tend to feel supported by people. And finally, knowledge and self-knowledge. If we're in contact with the Sangha, we will get knowledge about the Dharma. We will know what the Dharma is, what it means, what it's talking about, or we will tend to, because we will be doing talking about it, so we'll get knowledge of the Dharma. It gradually sinks in by sort of osmosis. It gradually affects the way we think. We gradually start thinking differently, seeing the world differently, because we're exposed to the ideas. We talk about the ideas. We know what the Dharma really is. It's not just the sort of book we picked out that we happen to like the title of, written by somebody who'd never practiced very much in their life but made loads of money out of the book. And that's the Dharma for us. We're not doing that. We really know what the Dharma is, so we are actually practicing the Dharma. So we'll get knowledge of the Dharma. We'll also get self-knowledge. We'll also get self-knowledge if we're around the Sangha. We need to know ourselves. And friendship is one way of doing that. The right kind of friendship. Friendship where we really are trying to help each other to see how we are, what we need to work on. We'll get self-knowledge. It's very difficult for us human beings to really see ourselves. We don't actually know ourselves on the whole very well. When we look at Meghia, we can really see this. But we're like that as well. We often got huge blind spots about ourselves, which are just absolutely obvious to others. I think that might be the reason why. I don't know if you've ever seen yourself on video. See yourself on video? It's like, ooh, am I really like that? It's because our body language is revealing something about us, and something we don't even know. It's amazing, even just hearing your voice sometimes, but particularly video. It's like, ooh, it's a really disturbing experience to see yourselves on video. See yourself on, oh, I find it so, I don't know about you. Because we don't really know ourselves. We've got an image of ourselves which is not what we're like. But other people can see what we're like just like that. Yeah, they see what we're like. And part of spiritual friendship is that sort of mutual reflection in a spirit of helping each other. We actually help other people to see themselves as they are. That's part, an important part of spiritual friendship. Not always a very comfortable part of spiritual friendship, but an important part of spiritual friendship. So we get self-knowledge. We get self-knowledge from friendship, spiritual friendship. We also get self-knowledge simply because, people push our buttons, don't they? It's actually relatively easy to, it can be, for the right sort of person, sort of introverted person. We can take ourselves off, separate ourselves from people and think, well, I'm just so serene. And I don't get angry. But go out and deal with people. It's like, do you know what they said to me? Et cetera, et cetera. Serenity, poof, it's gone like it's been atom-bombed. So we learn about ourselves when we put ourselves in situations where our buttons get pushed, and people do that. So we learn about ourselves. We learn what we have to work with. We learn where we really are, where we're really starting from. People give us feedback. So that's one way. I mean, self-knowledge, the Sangha, spiritual friendship gives us self-knowledge. I mean, there are other things as well. I think work does, especially work with other practitioners. Work is a real fine way of sort of maturing the heart to a certain extent, because we have to work with others again. It puts us in a situation where we can't hide, where we know ourselves. If things go wrong, if we fall out, if it's a complete failure, it's like a mirror. It's like a mirror where we see ourselves. And also, it has to be said, we also learn about ourselves from solitude. This text isn't saying that we shouldn't seek solitude, okay? It's not saying we shouldn't seek solitude, and it's not saying we shouldn't meditate. But it's saying something about pursuing meditation as the be-all and end-all. It's saying something about giving priority to the Sangha, recognizing the need for Sangha, recognizing how much we're influenced by the people we spend time with, and it's about not being a spiritual individualist. That's what the text is saying. But it's not saying, it's about recognizing we can't run before we can walk, but it's not saying don't meditate, don't seek solitude. Once we've been practicing for a while, once we've sort of got a reasonable meditation practice, it can be a really important practice to seek solitude for spells. All order members are encouraged to spend at least 4 weeks a year in solitary meditation, and people who have asked for ordination as they're coming towards ordination are encouraged to spend time in solitude. It's a great way to learn a lot about yourself when you just spend time on your own with your own mind. Meghia learnt a lot about himself from his experience in the mango grove. He might not have liked it, but he learnt a lot about himself. It wasn't what he expected. It wasn't very pleasant, but he learnt a lot about himself. So, all those ways. So I'm not. We must, you know, must say that the sutta is not saying do not ever spend any time in solitude, do not meditate, but it is saying recognize the need to do that in the context of sangha. Yeah, recognize the need to do that. In some sense, sangha's got to be primary. So, as I said at the start, this is a really important sutta. It's a really important sutta for us as practitioners in the West. Because Meghia is a bit like us. Meghia, in fact, is a lot like a lot of Western Buddhists. He thinks he can do it on his own. He doesn't necessarily think that he needs Sangha. He doesn't realise how important other people are and the right conditions. He overestimates his own spiritual development, and he seems to tend to think of it as insight, just in his sort of head. He sees the goal in very self-centred terms about him and his insight and his meditation, which is a bit like there is that tendency in a lot of Western practitioners, because we do come from this rather individualistic culture, that we see it about, as about me, me, me. Me, me, me Buddhism. It's all about me and my mental states and my meditation and my this and my that. The trouble is we're not going to get anywhere with me, me, me Buddhism. Buddhism, yeah, being about me, me, me is what most of us are most of the time. It's the sort of state of imprisonment in an ego that is normal for immature humanity. But it's that Buddhism is trying to take us beyond. It's trying to take us beyond this constant focus on me, me, me. What we need isn't me, me, me Buddhism. It's us, us, us Buddhism. We need us, us, us Buddhism because we all need Sangha to get anywhere. If we don't create Sangha, we're doomed spiritually. We're not going to get anywhere. Without Sangha, forget it. We're not going to get anywhere. So in a sense, there's a real sense in which creating Sangha has to be more important than our own practice. Because none of us are going anywhere unless we create the conditions, the sort of community among which we can do it. And we also need us, us, us Buddhism, because this is the only sort of Buddhism that is going to lead us out of the prison of our separate selfhood to heart's release. As long as it's about me, 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 the heart is stuck in me, me, me. When it's about us, 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 we're starting to open the heart. We're starting to release the heart. So, I don't know how I got into that rant. But it was a good one. I liked it anyway. How did I get in that? So Meghia is like a lot of us. Meghia is like us. He's like a lot of Western Buddhists, I think. So the five things the Buddha tells Meghia that he needs, I think, are five things that we really need. They're five things that we really need in our practice. We need spiritual friendship. We need to be living an ethical life. We need to put ourselves in situations where we discuss the Dharma with others, where we get it clear in our head what it is, where we reflect on it, where we let it sink in. We need to work on our motivation so that we keep going, so that we keep putting aside unskillful states, keep developing positive habits. We need knowledge. We need to know what the Dharma is so that we can practice it. Going off and meditating while not knowing why you're meditating, how you're meditating, or what you're trying to achieve by that meditation is not ever such a good idea, actually. We need to know what the Dharma is. We need to know what the Dharma is saying. We need to know the sorts of things we should be reflecting on, the sorts of ways, the attitudes that we should be bringing to meditation. We need to know the Dharma, to practice the Dharma. Seems absolutely self-evident, except that, well, to a lot of Western Buddhists, it doesn't seem to be self-evident. And we need knowledge about ourselves. We need to learn about ourselves through friendship, through spiritual friendship, and through other things like work and solitude. So we need all those five things, but most of all we need, as the Buddha said, spiritual friendship. Because if we get spiritual friendship, we'll get them all. If we keep in contact with the Sangha, if we find ways of spending more time with other practitioners, if we find time to spend with people who are at the same stage as ourselves, people who may be a bit more experienced than ourselves. Because if we do the others, if we do that, we will get all of the others without trying. And my word processor has cut off the rest of my talk, so I'll make it up as I go along. If we get all of that, then, like Meghia, we might, well, hopefully like Meghia afterwards, we might start to make our ripen our heart's release. And if we ripen our heart's release, then we might be really getting somewhere. We might be really getting somewhere with the Dharma. We might be getting to the sort of state that Padmavajra was talking about, where we have a heart of friendliness. We have a heart of friendliness for all beings, because our heart is open enough to have a heart of friendliness for all beings. Buddhism is very much about that. It's about being a friend to the world, being a friend to the universe, a friend to other people, a friend to ourselves. So if we do all of these, that's the sort of territory we're talking about. That's the sort of results that we may be expecting, where we can actually feel that sort of heart of friendliness radiating love and compassion in all directions. And as the Karaniya Metta Sutta said, if we do that, we will go beyond wrong views. That will lead us to insight, because we will be breaking out of this sort of prison of self-centeredness, which is the whole root of the problem. So for all of those reasons, the Meghya Sutta is a really important sutra, and it gives us some very clear directions for the spiritual life, which are not all about taking ourselves up off a mountainside and meditating. They're to do with ways that we can practice here and now, how we can really become a friend to the world by starting out by becoming a friend to some other human beings who are also practicing. Okay, so that's the Meghya Sutta.